North Korea launches again. It's Wednesday, January 26th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Casio in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, economic signs from trash. Looking back on COVID in Australia, COVID increase in young children, virtual reality helps soldiers, measuring box office success. It's all on today's VOA Asia. South Korean military officials say North Korea test-fired two suspected cruise missiles in its fifth round of weapons launches this month. North Korea has been increasing its testing activity recently in an apparent effort to pressure the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden over stalled nuclear diplomacy. One official said intelligence officials were analyzing the launches. Another said they were made from inland North Korea. North Korea previously issued a veiled threat to resume the testing of nuclear explosives and long-range missiles targeting the American homeland, which leader Kim Jong-un suspended in 2018 while initiating diplomacy with the United States. Read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. Officials say nearly two dozen sailors on an Australian military ship going to deliver aid to Tonga have tested positive for the coronavirus, raising concern they could bring COVID-19 to a Pacific nation that has so far managed to avoid any outbreaks. Australian Defence Minister Peter Dutton said his government was working with Tongan authorities to keep the ship at sea and make sure there is no threat to Tonga's 105,000 residents.
And we have a vessel, obviously, that we're very keen as quickly as possible to dock in Tonga so that we can get those supplies off and provide the support to people post the tsunami there. But we've also, in the interim, been able to cycle through a number of C-17s and to offload that aid and assistance. But ultimately, we're in the hands of the Tongan government. We're working very closely with them, and they have a 21-day quarantine period. So our ship will either stand off or it can port, offload the equipment that's there. We can do that in a contactless way, spray the equipment so that the chance of passing on the virus is obviously negligible. So there are different options that we're working through at the moment.
Tongan authorities have been wary that accepting international aid could usher in a bigger disaster than the huge eruption of an undersea volcano 10 days ago. Since the pandemic began, Tonga has reported just a single case of COVID-19 and has avoided any outbreaks. It is one of the few countries in the world currently completely virus-free. Officials in Indonesia said Tuesday a nightclub in West Papua province burned after two groups clashed inside the building. At least 19 people were killed. A spokesperson of West Papua Police told Metro TV that one of those killed was a member of one of the groups that clashed Monday night at the club in Sarong City. The spokesperson said 18 bodies were found after the fire. Police are still investigating what caused the clash and whether the fire was set or accidental. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Cambodia PM says Myanmar junta welcome at ASEAN if progress made. Report says anti-corruption fight is stalled and COVID not helping. Slovenian trade group reports Chinese backlash after PM praises Taiwan. Pakistan swears in first female Supreme Court judge. UNESCO report says the world failing to provide quality education for children. Find complete coverage on all these stories on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia on this Wednesday. With its borders closed and virtually all foreigners gone, North Korea is more inaccessible than ever during the coronavirus pandemic. So to learn about the reclusive country's economy, some North Korea watchers are picking up whatever scraps they can. In some cases, that means literally examining North Korean trash. as VOA's Bill Gallo reports from the inter-Korean border.
It's a cold January afternoon, and Professor Kang Dong-won is scouring the beach for trash, specifically North Korean trash that has washed ashore here on Yeonpyeong Island. It's a remote South Korean island near the disputed sea border with North Korea. Kang is excited. This is the 35th different type of Eskimo brand ice cream that he's found. In total, he's collected over 1,400 pieces of North Korean trash over the past year.
The waste is so diverse. Food, beverages, snacks, medicines, cosmetics. It's like a little market here at the beach.
Kang has visited North Korea. He used to make research trips to Chinese cities near the North Korean border. But during the pandemic, this is as close as he can get. And North Korea is incredibly close, just 4 kilometers away, easily visible with the naked eye, even in poor weather.
Turns out it's not actually that hard to find North Korean trash on South Korean beaches just like this one, if you know what you're looking for.
This propaganda leaflet slams conservative South Korean politicians. This piece of rubber was part of a trash bin at a thermal power plant. And like many products, this instant noodle wrapper specifies the exact factory where it was made. Important clues about what North Korea can import and produce, and how it markets products in perhaps the least capitalist country in the world.
During the Kim Jong-un era, North Korea has put more effort into package design. Not even North Korea can ignore the tastes and desires of its people.
In the quiet village nearby, residents say they barely notice the North Korean trash. Oh Ki-im says she's seen more than just garbage wash ashore.
Landmines also float around. You have no idea how much stuff comes from the north. So many products, even human corpses.
Kang, though, remains fascinated by just the trash. He's even written a book on his findings.
With this trash, I can see the lives of North Koreans. It helps me understand North Korea.
With North Korea closed indefinitely, scraps may be all that he has for a while. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Yeonpyeong Island, South Korea.
Still to come on VOA Asia, looking back on 2 years of COVID restrictions in Australia. Happening now in Asia, the Philippine telecoms regulator said on Tuesday it has awarded television broadcast frequencies of ABS-CBN Corp., the country's former top broadcasting company, to Advanced Media, which has links to a political ally of President Rodrigo Duterte. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. 2 years ago on Tuesday, the first case of COVID-19 was detected in Australia. The virus would trigger some of the world's toughest coronavirus controls. Phil Mercer reports for VOA from Sydney.
The first confirmed case of the new coronavirus in Australia was a man in his 50s who'd spent time in the Chinese city of Wuhan, where the infectious disease was first detected. 2 years later, Australia has recorded 1.6 million infections and more than 3,000 people have died, according to official government data. Health officials report that the number of COVID-19 patients in New South Wales hospitals, the nation's most populous state, is at almost 3,000, the highest level since the pandemic began. New South Wales Premier Dominic Perrottet has paid tribute Tuesday in Sydney to the state's medical staff.
Can I begin by thanking our health workers right across our state who are doing an inspirational and amazing job during these challenging times, as they have been over the last 2 years, in keeping people safe in our health system.
However, experts are optimistic the current Omicron wave may have peaked in Australia. 93% of eligible Australians have received 2 doses of a COVID-19 vaccine. New South Wales Chief Health Officer Dr. Kerry Chant has stressed the importance of receiving a booster shot.
For those with underlying health conditions, I just want to acknowledge that it's been a difficult time throughout the pandemic and a difficult time recently. But can I re-emphasise that booster doses will give you significant additional protection against severe disease?
New South Wales has Tuesday extended its indoor mask mandates and capacity limits for cafes and restaurants for at least another month. The pandemic prompted Australia to bring in some of the world's toughest disease control measures, including international border closures, lockdowns, and vaccine mandates for key workers. Many foreign travellers remain barred from entering the country. Borders between Australia's six states and two main territories have also been closed during the pandemic. Western Australia's plans to reopen its internal borders on February 5 have been postponed indefinitely because of the Omicron wave sweeping the rest of the country. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Taliban officials say they have held productive talks with U.S. and European envoys in Oslo. 3 days of talks opened on Sunday. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Welcome back to VOA Asia. In mid-January, the average number of daily new COVID cases in the U.S. fluctuated between 750,000 and 800,000, according to the Centers for Disease Control, COVID Data Tracker. Children under 5 remain one of the most vulnerable groups since they cannot be vaccinated yet. In the first week of January, more than 500,000 young children were diagnosed with COVID-19, an 80% increase compared to late December 2021. Maria Pruss has the story narrated by Anna Rice.
In August, at just 3 months old, Baker Mills entered an Atlanta children's hospital with COVID-19.
One of our biggest fears when we were pregnant with him was, knowing how bad COVID was him getting COVID because of all the unknowns about it and not knowing what to expect and hearing all the stories on how bad people with COVID is and how people are dying.
Although Baker had relatively mild symptoms, doctors still decided to hospitalize him due to his young age.
I'm just glad that it's not as bad with him, and I think it has a lot to do with us being fully vaccinated and me getting vaccinated while I was pregnant with him.
As of mid-January, about 8.5 million U.S. children had tested positive for the coronavirus. About 11% of those cases were confirmed during a two-week period in January of 2022. While children generally have milder symptoms, the speed at which Omicron spreads is overstraining the system.
This Omicron wave has really been, we have matched our worst Delta wave with hospitalizations, and then even more than that are clinic visits for what might be considered mild cases, but it's overwhelming clinics and emergency departments with just the number of kids coming in with fevers and real sore throats, and it's just a large volume of visits.
Children under 5 remain one of the most vulnerable groups because vaccines have yet to be approved for this youngest age group. As a result, many parents are opting to not send their little ones to daycare and pre-K. Yelena Wheeler, mother of 5-year-old CJ and 8-year-old Cambria, is among them.
And now the school districts are like, we don't have funds. We're not going to do mandatory testing. And so come send your child. We can't guarantee it's safe. I mean, we understand nothing is guaranteed safe. But it's one thing if all other districts were not doing mandatory testing. But one of our biggest districts right next door to us three blocks away from here, LAUSD has mandatory testing, and we don't.
But for other parents, COVID is now a part of life, and there is not much that can be done to avoid it altogether.
I'm not worried about at all. I want them to be open. I want my kid to go to school. In fact, I think schools, now that vaccines are widely available, the officials should start thinking about making school normal again.
In early January, U.S. Secretary of Education Miguel Cardona encouraged schools in the country to remain open for in-person learning. Many authorities recognize that online education has been hard on both children and parents, and that every school district is different.
I don't think that this is the time to have any one-size-fits-all on this. I think communities are seeing this classroom by classroom and school by school, how they need to continue to adjust to keep things reopened.
By mid-January, 64% of teenagers aged 12 to 17 in the U.S. were fully vaccinated, according to the CDC. Authorities are encouraging parents of younger children to vaccinate their younger kids aged 5 to 12, as doctors are preparing to deal with the rising surge in younger patients. For Maria Prus in Washington, NRI's VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, Japan expanded regions subject to tighter coronavirus curbs to cover 70% of the country on Tuesday. As the government tried to counter a record wave of COVID-19 cases caused by the Omicron variant. Stay up to date with VOA or listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Soldiers who have experienced combat trauma have a new way of getting help, walking through a virtual reality simulation of their experience. Dina Mitchell spoke to a psychologist about how it works.
This virtual reality experience is no game. It's an app called Brave Mind, designed to realistically portray a war zone, and its aim? To treat military personnel suffering from post-traumatic stress. Skip Rizzo is the creator of Brave Mind. He spoke to VOA over Zoom.
You can put the patient in specific contexts that are most relevant for them, whether it's an Afghan village or a busy Iraqi marketplace. The clinician can control the time of day, the sound effects. We're trying to make it so the brain doesn't react in fight, flight, or freeze mode when they walk into a crowd or they have to sit at a restaurant with their back to the door.
Chris Meek, founder of Soldier Strong, a nonprofit working to get Brave Mind into Veterans Affairs hospitals, says the app appeals to young military veterans.
The post 9/11 generation is, you know, really a gaming generation. It's just a different style than going and laying on the couch and talking to a therapist.
Rizzo says virtual reality therapy works well for most patients, but there are those who prefer traditional methods. He said that reliving trauma, even in simulation, is hard medicine for a hard problem.
It's always going to be a difficult memory, but it's not going to be a restrictive experience that keeps people from engaging.
When first introduced to Brave Mind, Meek wanted to try out the various virtual reality experiences. He was particularly affected by one created for survivors of sexual trauma, a new category.
The scenario has you in a bar and you're talking to somebody and your eyelids fade to black. And then next thing you know, you wake up and you see your eyelids slowly open and you're on your back with your predator standing over you. And that one really freaked me out.
Rizzo says some clinicians have advised this scenario might be too much for their patients.
This is why this is not self-help. This is a tool in the hands of a well-trained clinician.
Certainly a hard medicine for a hard problem. Dina Mitchell for VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new British-based study provides evidence that the melting of a giant iceberg called A68A has released some 152 billion metric tons of fresh water into the South Atlantic Ocean near the island of South Georgia. According to a press release from the UK's University of Leeds, 152 billion metric tons could fill 61 million Olympic-sized swimming pools. The huge chunk of ice, then called A68, fell into the ocean after breaking away or calving from the Larsen C ice shelf that runs along the eastern coast of the Antarctic Peninsula in July 2017. With an area of nearly 6,000 square kilometers, iceberg A68 was once considered to be the world's sixth largest iceberg. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Finally on VOA Asia, just as studios were resuming theatrical releases at the end of last year, the Omicron variant rolled in, forcing a return to streaming or a theater release streaming hybrid. Now that the traditional way of viewing new releases has changed, the film industry faces a crucial question. In the era of COVID-19, how does one measure box office success? VOA's Penelope Pulu has more.
Spider-Man: No Way Home has surpassed all expectations at the box office. According to Forbes.com, the third installment in the Spider-Man franchise, with Tom Holland, Zendaya, and Benedict Cumberbatch, has grossed a whopping $1.63 billion worldwide since its theatrical release in December, making it Sony's biggest movie of all time. The film has yet to be released in China. Variety's awards editor, Clayton Davis, says there is more than one reason why this Spider-Man is a hit.
You don't pull in $260 million in an opening weekend and it's just kids. There's no way. I think everybody came out for it. People were sick of being home.
People were going with the expectation that this is going to be a great experience to see on a big screen with the big surround sound coming at. You expect the production quality to be good. You expect the acting to be good.
Richard Craig, Associate Professor of Communication at George Mason University, also attributes Spider-Man's box office success to its multi-generational fan audience.
A lot of people like myself grew up on Spider-Man. Now you have new generations that are grabbing. My son is a Spider-Man fan. Like I said, you've had three recent adaptations of Spider-Man, so it crosses a lot of different lines in terms of who we are as people.
According to Insider.com, the top three box office hits last year were all Marvel tentpoles. Spider-Man, No Way Home,
is this what you wanted?
Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, and Venom, Let There Be Carnage, all had theater-only releases despite the fluctuating pandemic. On the other hand, highly anticipated films such as Lana Wachowski's The Matrix Resurrections and Denis Villeneuve's Dune had hybrid releases in movie theaters and streaming platforms and seemed to have underperformed at the box office. According to Variety.com, Denis Villeneuve blames Dune's lackluster performance on Warner Brothers' decision to do a hybrid release. But Angela Watercutter of Wired.com says there is no single metric to determine whether a film did well on a theater streaming hybrid because it is not clear how many people have watched at home, where some people share video streaming services, while others might view the copyrighted films on torrenting sites that provide them for free, a practice often associated with piracy. Richard Craig says Hollywood will have to find new ways to measure success and secure profit from streaming because he believes streaming is here to stay since movie theaters cost money to operate, especially during the pandemic.
Even after COVID, does it make more sense for them to funnel us into theaters and force us to, only have access to these films for 7 to 8 weeks in these particular spots? Or is it more profitable for them? Allow us to watch it at our leisure, whether that be through subscription or some sort of advertising profit market mechanism that they create.
That remains to be seen for an industry in flux. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
Read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook. That's all the time we have for today's VOA Asia. Make sure you find us on all our social media platforms. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Jessica Stone. I'm Chris Cascao in Washington. Enjoy the day, stay safe, and be well.